having poor college students in your life is that you can bribe them to say nice things about you. I love that. Well, I will tell you, I am a little bit nervous about speaking in public. Although I do it often, I still get nervous. So there is something that I need you to do for me to help me feel better about speaking to you today. So I need you just real quickly to stand up. I know you're just standing for a long time, but she gave you a little bit of a rest. So I need you to stand up. I need you to put your hand up in the air. The first thing I need you to do is say hi to my friend Tammy. I'm not sure where she is. Is she still in the room? Turn around and say hi, Tammy. And if she's not in here, she'll be embarrassed. Okay, and the other thing I need you to do is I need you to make a victory sign. So two fingers up in the air. I need you to flip that around, pull it down, pull it over, and push up. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you. All right, go ahead and sit down. Okay. One thing you just learned is that I become a control freak once I'm up front because I realize how much power I have. No. But I am so thankful to be able to get to come and share with you today and get to talk with you. I have a heart for college students and have one and getting ready to have another. But that has been one of the blessings of my life is to get to work with colleges and college students over the years. One of the things that Jacqueline mentioned is that I began singing professionally when I was 16 years old. What that means is that I always had that lack of intrinsic knowledge of worth. When you're a performer, and some of you will understand this, if you're an athlete, if you're someone who's obsessive about your grades, if you're a worship artist, if you're someone who paints, you understand, even teachers, pastors, you understand that concept of only feeling like you're as good as your next time up to bat. You've heard that phrase before. So you understand that for me, I was only as good as the next performance. I was always judging my value based on how well I performed. There are some of you probably who do that too. You forget that you have intrinsic worth, that you have value, not just because of what you do, but because of who you are and because of who Christ is in your life. So that's the first thing I want to mention to you, is that know that you have intrinsic worth. It is very difficult when you're performance-oriented to remember that, and all of us are in some way. That and be grounded in your own reality. One of the things that helps you when you become successful or you start in that journey to success is being very, very grounded in who you are, in your own reality. You see people every day who aren't grounded in their reality, the reality of who they are, the reality of who they're not, the reality of who Christ is. And so you see them seeking value in different ways. You see them doing that through multiple relationships. You see them doing that through alcohol or drugs. They're looking for something to fill that gap. They're looking for that next fix or that next person to flatter them. People who jump from one relationship to another or one job to another, they don't have that stamina to push through the hard times because they thrive on that flattery. And you'll see that a lot in the movie industry or in the acting industry. Sometimes you see that in pastors, in churches, especially large churches, where the pastor thrives on attention. And then when they stop getting that attention, they start seeking it in other ways that are destructive. Okay, so that was kind of just a foundation of where we're going to go. So we're going to talk about how to find success for your life. What is that formula to find that path for you? And it's a pretty simple formula that we're going to walk through. It's believe, receive, and become. So the believe part is just, again, know that you have value and know that God has a plan for you. Do you believe that today, that God has a plan for you? Most of you have probably read or memorized or at least heard Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. So that's what we're going to talk to you about today, is your future, where you're headed. Do you believe that God has the power to make the crooked places straight? to make the rough places smooth? To take those places in your life that don't make sense, that are kind of dark or kind of ugly, and repurpose them with texture and light so they become something beautiful in your life? One of the privileges that I had growing up is that my dad is an artist. And one of the joys I had was watching him paint. And I loved watching him paint these pictures. And he'd put in the sky. There's all these layers. He'd put in the sky and put in the background, put in the trees. And then he'd put some weird ugly thing in the middle of the painting. And I'd be like, I don't get it. It would be some bizarre dark smudge that meant nothing. It didn't look like anything. It didn't mean anything. And I would sit there and watch, going, why did he just ruin the picture? What was he thinking? But as he added the layers, that dark smudge started to take shape. And it would become the focal point of the picture. It would become something beautiful. Well, think about your own life, those dark spots. Those smudges. As God works in you and you allow him to add those layers and textures, that's what happens. You can take, you've heard the phrase, maybe your mess becomes your message. God can take those places of hurt or those places of pain or those mistakes that you've made and turn them into an opportunity for you to help someone else, either who's on that journey now and struggling down that path, or to prevent someone from going down that path. There's power in being able to look at someone and say, I've been exactly where you are. Let me tell you how God can be faithful to walk you through it, to lead you to the other side. There's power and purpose in that. So I want to encourage you, if you have people in your life who you see are struggling, and you understand that struggle personally, be there for them. Speak life to one another. I think as Christians, we don't do that often enough. We try to look away or not notice, instead of saying, I get it. I know. There's power in that when you do that for each other. So the first part is believe. Believe God's plan for you. Believe he has a plan for others. And know that it's true. Know that you have value. The second part is receive. Now, that sounds like a very passive thing. That sounds very passive. That sounds like, okay, God has a plan for me. Bring it on. It's not quite as passive as that. There is an act of being willing to go where God calls you to do. It's kind of like Samuel when he said, here I am, Lord, send me. Jeremiah 29:11, we read that, but Jeremiah 29:12-13 say, then you will call upon me and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. There's an action involved in that. God has a plan for you. Well, you have a responsibility in that to pray, to seek, to do that with all your heart. That's when God answers. That's when he'll be found. So it's not just a matter of God's got a plan for me. He's got it all figured out, and his plan's going to work no matter what I do or how I act or whether or not I have an intentionality in my path. No, you have a responsibility in the receiving of that plan to be in prayer, to engage him with your heart, to engage him and be willing. I will tell you that active note is really good for people like me. You've heard the phrase, be still and know. That is the most painful thing in the world for me. I'm sitting there going, okay, Lord, you know I'm a know-and-go kind of girl. Tell me what you want me to do. I'll go do it. But that be still function, how many of you have had to be still for a period of time and wait on the Lord to answer a question? oh, it's painful, isn't it? There is nothing passive about that waiting. You're sitting there going, okay, Lord, come on, come on, come on. Lord, please, please, just give me an answer. There is nothing passive about the be still and know and that waiting process. I know for me, I have a tendency to, my timeline is getting longer as I get older and have walked with the Lord longer, but I still have this really bad habit that I go, Lord, you have a plan. You have a plan. You have a plan. You have plans to prosper me, not to harm me. Plans to give me hope, to give me a future. You have a plan. Lord, I know you're really busy. Would you like me to just outline a few? And then I start playing multiple choice. Then I start going, okay, Lord, here's plan A. This is good. And this is plan B. You like this one? This is plan C. And I'm going to pray over these three things for the next week. I'm going to fast. I'm going to pray. And you just tell me which one you like. And you know what his answer always is? D, none of the above. And it's a crazy maker. You go, Lord, I spent so much time working on these plans. And he says, yes, but I've asked you to be still and know. And I go, oh, yeah, forgot that part. So you understand that there is an active part of that being still that is very, very difficult for us. Expect God in the unexpected. That's the D, none of the above. I will tell you that I have never gotten a job in a traditional fashion. I've never saw the job I wanted, sent in my resume, and got the phone call for the interview and got the job. It's always been this very strange journey of God demonstrating who he is in my life. One of the first times was right out of college. I went to interview at this department store, and it's kind of like a JCPenney's kind of thing. And I went into this place, and all my friends were getting jobs there, and I thought, this is so cool. I'll be in the mall. I'll have this job with all my friends. And I went in there, and I asked if they were still accepting applications, and they said no. Okay, well, performance-oriented people, rejection's not a good thing for us. So I left going, okay, Lord, what now? And I'm walking through the mall, and I'm just kind of praying and grumbling and basically complaining to God. And I stop in front of this store window, and I felt God tell me to go in. And I'm looking in the store window, and I'm going, I can't even afford to walk in the door, let alone actually buy anything there. Don't think they're going to hire me. And I felt God tell me again, go in. And so in true obedient fashion, I went, whatever. And so I walked in, and I went in, and I tentatively asked the girl at the counter, are you guys accepting applications? And she looked at me, and she said, well, actually, yes. She said, but the owner's in the back. Why don't you go back there and talk to her? So I walked back to the next counter, and they're busy. They've got customers, and really they had clients, not customers. Again, really expensive clothes. And so I'm standing there, and I'm going, are you accepting applications? And the woman's looking down, and she looks up, and she stops for a minute, and she goes, you're hired. And I went, what? And she said, I know this is going to sound strange, but I dreamed about you last night. God told me to hire you when you came in today. Now, I was kind of new in my Christian walk at that point, so there's probably me going, whoop, whoop. Okay. She did actually make me go through the interview process, by the way. But I worked there for several years, and I really enjoyed my time there. It was a sweet time. I was there for 3 years, and although I spent most of my paycheck, It was a great growing experience. Now, I'm gonna take a rabbit trail, and I'm gonna intentionally tell you I'm taking a rabbit trail so that you don't just think I'm completely random, although I am. When I was working there, I have to tell you this funny story. I'm working there, and there are these older women who came in, and I was pregnant at the time with Jacqueline. Now, I was graduated from college because I stayed for a while, and I was graduated from college, and Sean and I, Coach, and I were... he was pastoring our first church. We'd been there for several years. And so I'm a pastor's wife. But I get that I'm small, and I always have looked younger than my true age. So I'm pregnant, and these women come in, and they're talking. Now, they're whispering to each other, but they're hard of hearing, so they're whispering really loudly. And they're saying to each other, "Look at that poor little girl. She got herself in trouble." Well, this will give me an idea about who I am. I went over and I went, "Oh, no, no, it's okay. It's my pastor's baby." I waited just a while they went, and then I laughed and said, "No, really, he's my husband." My boss at the time heard what I did, and she said, "Okay, that was really funny, but don't ever do it again." She said that I was going to be calling 911. So again, there's the rabbit trail. We'll come back. But I had to tell you that story because it was so much fun. So those of you who are thinking about, you know, marrying pastors, now you know what, you know, when you have your first child, you can tell people that. So... One of the other interesting places was where I work now. It was really funny. I had a friend call me. I'd been applying for all these different jobs, and I'd been interviewing at Baylor University, and I'd gone through like 8 rounds of interviews with them, and it was kind of this crazy thing where the process for interviewing had taken so long, and in the meantime, Coach had switched jobs, And so, the kids switched schools, and I'm just going, okay, this is weird. And they were saying, "Well, you got to move to Waco to work here. You can't live in Dallas." And I went, "Okay, you want me to leave Dallas to live in Waco to drive back to Dallas to meet with all of your donors? I'm not sure I get this." I said, "Are you sure I can't just live in Dallas and meet with all the people who give you money there?" And they're like, "No, really, we need you to move to Waco." So finally we got down to the last 2 people, and I said, "Okay, this is a really small world of people who do what I do." I said, "So who's the other candidate?" I said, "I know you can't really tell me, but could you tell me?" And so they told me, and I said, "He's wonderful, hire him." And they looked at me and went, what? And I said, "No, really. I'm at a place where I don't feel peace anymore." I said, "Hire him. He's absolutely incredible. And I'll go do something else." Okay, so I said that very bravely. And then I went, "What am I going to do? I need a job." And so anyway, I get this phone call from a friend who says, I know you, and I know Hope for the Heart, and I think that maybe this would be a good fit." And I looked at their website, and I went, "Oh, a little radio ministry. I don't think so." And he called me back, and he said, "No, really, you need to apply for this job." And I went, "I don't think so." And he said, "I'm going to wait on the phone until you turn in your resume. And if you hang up, I'm going to call back." I went, "Okay, all right, whatever." So I sent him my resume, and then I get a call from the HR manager who says, she starts talking to me, and we talk for a little bit. And I was so impressed with her. I liked her so much. When she invited me to the interview, I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to come just because I like her. And still didn't want the job. And then I got there, and it's this, if any of you have seen it, it's this enormous building. It's like 187,000 square foot building. It's got its own private garden and this ginormous fireplace in the middle of it and its own cafeteria. And I went, well, maybe it's a little bigger than I thought. Okay, well, they're in 60 countries and 28 languages. Okay, it was bigger than what I thought. So I get in there, and I start interviewing, and I start interviewing their CFO, and I'm asking him all these questions, and I'm badgering him with things, and then like halfway through the interview, I go, "Oh, you're supposed to be asking me questions. I'm so sorry." And so he starts talking to me, and we visit for a while. So And then he takes me to meet the president a couple days later, and we get in the meeting, and he says, money people. Yeah. All right. I haven't met very many of you development people that actually know Jesus. So let me just put my cards on the table. I don't have real high hopes for this meeting, but he seems to like you, so we'll meet. And I went, oh, this is not going well. So he says, before we start, let's pray. And he looks at me and he says, you pray. I went, okay. So I pray, and we get done, and he leans back and he looks at me and he says, how long have you worked in ministry? And I said, 25 years. And he went, really? Went, yeah. And he went, okay, maybe you are a Christian. Thank you so much. Phew. So anyway, but it got better from there, and I've been there now for almost 3 years and have had wonderful, amazing opportunities to work with incredible people since I've been there. But again, it was a very unusual way to come to what God's plan was. So we've talked about believe, we've talked about receive, and then we're going to talk about become. Become is probably one of the most important pieces. You know, that's the fulfillment of God's promise in your life. Most people in your life will tell you, you need to learn how to say no. You need to set boundaries. You've got to be able to compartmentalize your life. Don't overcommit. Learn how to say no. I'm going to tell you, learn how to say yes. Forget the learning now. It comes a lot easier than saying yes. Say yes to what God has for you. Say yes to new opportunities, even when you might fail. You'll learn something from it. You'll gain something from it. There is a poster that used to hang on the wall in our college that said, what you are is God's gift to you, but what you become is your gift back to God. So what is your gift back to God? What are you becoming? Are you becoming a person of integrity? Are you becoming a person of commitment? Are you becoming a person who's obedient? Are you becoming someone who's kind and honors others? Are you becoming something else? You see, the funny thing about what God calls us to do is it doesn't change with your title. It doesn't change with your paycheck. It doesn't change with your geographic location. What God calls us to is consistent throughout our lives. Whether it's honoring people, whether it's exhorting or preaching, whether it's teaching people, even people who aren't teachers, who aren't in the profession of teaching, if God's instilled in them to be a teacher, they will find a way to teach. Even if it's staying at home as a mom teaching their kids how to tie their shoes. What God has called you to is a part of who you are. It doesn't change. So find those things along that path. I ask you, are you trying new things? Are you learning new things? One of the things that I met with an executive coach, and he does a lot of training for high-profile people, and they'll say, I need to figure out what I need to do next. I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this. And they'll say, what should I do now? What can I do to get better? And he'll look at them and say, learn to play the violin. They're like, but I don't even know how to read music. And he will say, the discipline of learning something new that is outside of your comfort zone will add new dimension to your life. Whether that's learning an instrument, whether it's learning to play golf. Oh, that was painful for him. He taught me how to play golf. Yeah, most embarrassing moment is when I actually hit the tee out from under the ball and up the hill in front of his boss. Yeah, okay. So do those things that stretch you, that add new dimension, or at least make for a great funny story. When I was in college, I had some friends who came to me and said, okay, now you can't tell from out there maybe, but I'm 5'1". I'm the same height as Jacqueline. And I had some friends who came to me because they only had 6 players on the basketball team. And they came to me and said, we need bench people. Okay, now at the time, I hadn't met Coach yet. I knew nothing about basketball. I knew you couldn't run down the court with the ball, but that was pretty much it. And that, and you're supposed to try to get in that little net thing. And so they're going, no, we need bench people. And I went, psh, wear uniforms and I bench, I can do this. Okay, so in 3 days, they tried to teach me everything you need to know about basketball. Yeah, not good. So I'm sitting there on the bench, and the coach says, go in for Cynthia. Now, Cynthia is this amazing point guard who can handle the ball really well. And he says, Terry, go in for Cynthia. And I went, no, I'm a bench person. And he went, what? And I said, no, that's my job. I'm a bench person. And he's like, get in the game. I'm like, okay, but you'll be sorry. So I go over and I check in at the table and I'm waiting and I'm just going, oh, this is crazy. And so I'm running down the court and they have the ball and I'm looking at the girl with the ball and I'm like, you know, I could probably catch her. I could probably take that away from her. So I did. But when I went to turn with the ball, my feet got tangled up with hers. And then I tripped her and fell on top of her, and it was kind of a mess. So as I'm helping her up off the floor, I'm going, I'm so sorry. I'm a bench person. I really thought that was a position. I shouldn't be out here. And she said, what? She's like, get away from me. Because she was a real basketball player. She didn't know that bench position was actually a position. So then we have the ball now. Because I did actually successfully take it away from her, even though I, you know, fouled her in the process and tripped all over her. So we have the ball, and I'm playing point guard. And I hear my coach yell, now don't forget, I'm going to move over here so you can see me a little bit. Don't forget what we talked about in practice. Well, I kind of remembered in practice that we talked about faking with the ball. He never mentioned this whole idea of a pivot foot. So I thought it was just that you couldn't move with the ball. So I'm doing this. The referees are laughing so hard they can't even blow the whistle. So at that point, the coach calls me out and he goes, you're right, you're a bench person. So I have found my calling in life as it relates to basketball. But the lesson is, I have a great story out of it, even though it was a disaster. And my friends, we all still laugh about it. And it was fun. I stretched. I learned something new. Got some great exercise in the process and probably a dose of humility that I needed. Be willing to try new things. Don't be afraid in that becoming process to try some new things. College is a great place to try new stuff. And some of you, I think you've worked really hard to get here, so you think about college as a destination. But I want you to think about college as an airport. It's the place where you go that launches you into the next part of your life. This isn't the destination. So you don't have to have it all figured out while you're here. This is a great place to make mistakes or go to the wrong gate or miss a flight or whatever. Just try new things. Be willing to do that. I have a caption on my screen that says, Lord, let me never dream so small that I forget how much I need you. That's one of the things I want to ask you today. So we talk about this believe, receive, become. Now, if you take that together, that BRB, what does that mean in text language? Be right back. That's why it's important for us to go through that process, because Jesus is going to be right back. What is your dream? What is it God's called you to do? What is it he's laid upon your heart? Is it something you go, yes, I can do that? If so, it's too small. Dream bigger. Make it more. When you think about your dream, does it make your heart pound? Do you get a lump in your throat? Do you think that if I tell people, they'll laugh? good. If not, dream bigger. One of my favorite things about doing what I do and helping clients with multi-million dollar projects is the very first board meeting, because they are so excited. I'm coming to help them raise millions of money, and I'm going to do all the work, and I'm going to work some magic. And they sit there and they go, we're going to build this $10 million building, and we're going to do this, and we're going to have this, and we're going to have this, and it's going to be so amazing. And I go, wonderful. One of the things we need to start with, the very first thing we need to determine, is what you're willing to give to help make this happen. And they go, what? And I go, no, see, you are the donors. This starts with you. And they go, well, maybe we could just buy some paint and figure out how to refurbish that one little section of the building we have. But we work through that process, and eventually they figure out this really is a process. It's a plan. It's not magic. It's a lot of hard work. And that's what I want for you for your lives, that as you look at that, you look at your dream, and you're going, we're going to do this and this and this and this, that you push through that time when you go, well, maybe I could just add a little paint. Don't settle for that. God has something bigger for you. Push through. Work the plan. I gave you scripture throughout this, but I want to ask you, when you think about your dream and you think about the size of your dream, you have to ask yourself, whose power am I relying upon? Is it my own or is it God's? I want to give you this scripture as we close. 1 Thessalonians 5:23 and 24. May the God himself, the God of peace, sanctify you through and through. May your spirit, soul, and body be kept blameless. That's important. That's part of that becoming. That's your active part of receiving, too. Be kept blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's the be right back. He's coming soon. The one who calls you and is faithful, and he will do it. That means he's going to do it. You don't have to do all the work on your own. Let me pray for you guys as we close. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for this amazing group of students. Father, I thank you for the plans that you have for their lives. Father, I thank